You've been searching for the best way to generate passive income in your life and heard that real estate is a great way to do it. But you're tired of all the so-called gurus who are all talk and no substance. Get ready to celebrate because Kevin Buck has spent 14 years successfully making it happen. This is the Real Estate Investing for Cash Flow podcast. Now, here's Kevin Buck.
Hey guys, Kevin Bupp here with episode number 147 of the Real Estate Investor for Cashflow podcast, where our mission is to help you build and maintain massive amounts of cash flow through income-producing real estate investments. And our guest for this week's show is real estate expert and co-host of the number one real estate investing podcast on iTunes, Brandon Turner. If you don't know who Brandon Turner is, he is the guy from Bigger Pockets. You guys all know about Bigger Pockets, right? Well, in today's show, we're going to be speaking with Brandon about how he got his start as a real estate investor and why he's in love with multifamily real estate. Even better than that, though, we're going to discuss the reasons why he is shifting away from his smaller investments and focusing solely on larger apartment properties, as well as my favorite, mobile home parks. And so in today's show, you're going to learn how Brandon got his start as an investor by flipping homes before getting bit by the rental bug. You're going to learn why he thinks you should steer clear of single-family homes if your goal is to build a cash flow real estate business. You're going to learn why Brandon is changing his focus over to mobile home parks and is currently working on purchasing his very first park. In fact, we're helping him do that. You'll learn the reasons why Brandon is starting to divest of his smaller investments with the intention of using that equity to purchase larger scale multifamily properties and or mobile home parks. You'll learn about the most common challenges that new investors face when getting started and how to easily overcome them. You'll learn about the magic of direct mail and why you need to add this strategy to your real estate business right away. You'll learn why multifamily is the perfect asset to build incredible wealth while also maintaining a very even-keeled work-life balance. You're going to learn what sequential steps Brandon would take to rebuild his business if he lost everything tomorrow, and much, much more. Guys, if this is the first time you're tuning in, just want to welcome you to our incredible family that we have here at the Real Estate Investing for Cashflow podcast. Or if you're one of the many thousands that tune in each and every week, I want to thank you and let you all know how grateful I am that you're here with me, okay? And just a few quick items before we get on to the interview with Brandon. First and foremost, this is a big special treat, okay? I've got a huge announcement that I want to make. I've been keeping it secret for a while now, actually going on 2 years, but I wanted you guys to be among the first to know. Now, as you probably already know, if you've been listening to me for any period of time, I've been a full-time real estate investor for more than 18 years now, and I've had hundreds of single-family rentals, hundreds of apartment doors, along with a magnitude of other miscellaneous commercial real estate along the way. But until about 5 years ago, I had no clue what I was missing until I discovered the holy grail of real estate investments, which I think is mobile home parks. Well, after the hundreds and the thousands of requests from the many of you whom I've personally either communicated with via email or phone calls or even in person over the last few years, my business partner, Charles Dehart, and myself are writing and releasing a book on mobile home park investing. Now, we've kind of been secretly working on this behind the scenes for the last 2 years now, and we plan on completing within the next couple of months, okay? So it's coming up really soon. And as a gift to you guys for being such loyal listeners, and prior to putting it up for sale on Amazon, I'd like to offer you a copy absolutely free, okay? Now, I will tell you that this will be the most comprehensive book that you've ever read on the topic of mobile home park investing. I know it's out there. I've read them all, okay? And it's going to show you exactly how you can start achieving 20, 30, 40, 50, even 100% cash on cash returns and create a lifetime of monthly cash flow in this incredible niche, okay? This is all I invest in. I love mobile home parks, okay? If you guys want a free copy of this book, just text Kevin to 41411 and get placed on my VIP list to grab your copy before anyone else gets it, okay? Again, just text Kevin, K-E-V-I-N, to 41411 and be put on the VIP list to get a copy absolutely free as soon as I release it, okay? Also, if you're an accredited investor and you're looking for a passive investment opportunity, okay, and you're looking to team up with a group of experienced operators, then you need to check out the partnership opportunity that me and my team have at Sunrise Capital Investors, okay? We are currently looking for investors just like you who are seeking above average returns to partner with us on deals, okay? We have multiple mobile home parks in contract now and have numerous others that are in the pipeline, and we're looking for serious investors who want to partner with our winning team. Now, I can tell you that I keep my finger really close on the pulse of the various other investment offerings that are being offered out there, multifamily and in different commercial real estate niches. I mean, I go to all different crowdfunding sites. I know what's out there, and I haven't seen anything that can hold a candle to the opportunity that we're offering. You can get more information about our company and download our investment prospectus by going to sunrisecapitalinvestors.com or by calling 888-260-9455. Now, we have a secure investor portal directly on our website, and you can download and review all the investment material and see if it might be a good fit for you. Again, go to sunrisecapitalinvestors.com or you can just call us, 888-260-9455. And just another real quick thing I want to mention here, we have a large majority of our investors that are taking advantage of investing with us through their self-directed IRA. So if you currently have a retirement account that just isn't really performing up to your standards, we need to talk, guys, okay? We've actually partnered with a local company here. Actually, they're a national company, but with their local branch, Advanta IRA. It's actually the same company that I use for all my self-directed investments. They're here to answer questions for you. In fact, we've created a special landing page, which I'm going to place in the show notes, and that is info.advantaira.com/sunrisecapital. Now, I know this is probably hard to remember as you're driving or jogging down the beach or whatever you're doing at this moment. And so I'll put it in the show notes so that you can go ahead and click on that link and get sent directly to that website. If you have a retirement account and you'd like to learn how to invest passively in our opportunity, okay, you can go to that landing page. And again, sunrisecapitalinvestors.com, that is our company website. And just another little surprise I want to mention. I'm sure there's probably a large majority of you guys that you might be interested in more active investments, right? Like, I'm an active investor. I don't want to just sit back and, you know, do nothing with my time. I want to be out there, you know, rolling up my sleeves and getting my hands dirty, okay? So if that sounds like you, if that sounds like that fits your personality, then I've got a special offer for you. For any person who invests in our company at sunrisecapitalinvestors.com, we are offering a lifetime membership to our flagship Mobile Home Park Academy training program. So if you have the interest of learning the mechanics, the ins and outs of the mobile home park business rather than just being passive, then I'll give you a lifetime access to the academy, and that'll allow you to work side by side, literally, with Charles and myself. And so maybe you don't just want to act or passively invest your money. You actually want to learn the business as well. So maybe one day you want to go do your own deal. Well, guess what? You'll be working side by side with us, and you'll learn our exact systems and processes so that you can build your own mobile home park business if you so choose, okay? If you want to learn more about Mobile Home Park Academy, just go to mobilehomeparkacademy.com. And guys, lastly, if you're in the Tampa Bay area, that's where I am based out of. I'm in Clearwater, Florida. I'd love to meet you, man. We love meeting others that share the same passion for real estate investing that we do. And I've met hundreds of you at Panera Breads for beers, for dinners. So I know a lot of you reach out to me when we come to town. I want to meet more of you. So if you're coming into Tampa or the Tampa Bay area, let me know when you're coming. Shoot me an email, my personal email. This comes directly to me, not some assistant or virtual assistant or anything like that. Kevin@kevinbupp.com. Shoot me an email. Let me know when you're coming into town. And I would love to coordinate a time to meet with you when you're here visiting. So guys, now let's get on to the part of the show that you've been waiting for, which is our interview with Brandon. So here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, today on the show, we're thrilled to be joined by entrepreneur, real estate investor, published author, and co-host of the number one real estate investing podcast on iTunes, Brandon Turner. Brandon purchased his first real estate investment at the age of 21 and has since gone on to build quite a substantial portfolio of income-producing properties. His activities as a real estate investor have afforded him the luxury of leaving the rat race and living a life defined by no corporate boundaries. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Brandon Turner to the show. Brandon, how you doing today, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing so good. That was like the best introduction I've ever had. That was fantastic.
Oh, you don't have to butter me up, man.
No, this is surreal. It's surreal because I listen to your podcast a lot. You know, I've listened to like dozens and dozens, if not maybe hundreds of hours of you talking. And so this is really good to be able to like, you know, talk to you. I don't want to say face to face, but I don't know, mouth to mouth.
Yeah, right. Mouth to mouth. Weird? That's very creepy, actually.
That is a creepy phrase. I'm going to use that more often now.
Oh, gosh. So the number one in real estate investing podcast, I didn't mention the name there, but is obviously Bigger Pockets. And you've been a co-host on there for how many years now? How long have you guys been doing that show?
A little over 4 years now. Okay. Yeah, it was 13. Yeah, January of 2013 was our first episode.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, man. Crazy. Yeah,
you guys have been absolutely killing it. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I learn way more than I think anybody who listens to the show does. So
I feel the same way. It's funny. I actually go back and listen to my own show sometimes because I feel like I've missed a few like the key points or fragments that have been given by the guests I've been interviewing. So I'll go back and listen to my own shows time and time again.
Kind of, I hear you. Same here.
So for those that don't know who you are, which I'm sure most people do, but in case they don't know who Mr. Brandon Turner is, and what Bigger Pockets is, take a few minutes, Brandon. Tell us your background. Tell us how you got involved in real estate, and also, you know, tell us a little bit about your involvement in Bigger Pockets.
Sure. So when I was 21 years old, I was working this like minimum wage job overnight at like this group home, you know, helping developmentally disabled adults, and I didn't like it at all, but it was overnight and I had to stay awake most of the night. So I was watching flipping TV shows, you know, all the flip that house, flip this house, all that. And in that process, I kind of fell in love with the idea of doing real estate. And about the same time, a friend of mine told me, you know, it's cheaper to buy a house than to rent one. And so, and she was an agent. So I was like, oh, okay, well, let's go buy one. And this was 2007, right? So as long as you had a pulse, like they would throw like $1 million loan at you. So luckily I didn't spend $1 million, but I went and bought like the cheapest house I could find. Just, my mom was a garage sale mom, right? Every Saturday morning, go to garage sales. So I was like, well, what's the cheapest thing I can find? What's the best deal? And I found a cheap, nasty little house for $80,000 and fixed it up, and then ended up selling it and made a little bit of money. And I thought, man, that was a lot of fun. So I decided to become a flipper, which didn't really work out because back in 2007, 2008, market crashed. And I ended up turning my flips. I was doing just a couple at a time, turning them into rental properties. And I really fell in love with rental properties. And I thought, you know, flipping houses was just a job. But when I bought a duplex, for example, and I lived in half of it, the tenants come over and gave me $650 for rent. And my whole mortgage was $620. Like that concept just changed my life. And I realized, like, well, I could just keep doing this. And eventually, you know, I can get a tenant to pay for my student loans and my car payments and my vacations and everything of my life. And so I just started collecting units.
All right. Good deal. And so where was that out? I mean, geographically speaking, where were you based out of back then?
So everything back then and today, I've done everything in the same county, which is Grays Harbor County, which is about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours southwest of Seattle. So we're like kind of a beach area near Seattle. So it's everything about that very first property all the way up until where I live today. I am looking to expand. I set a goal not to buy anything in my county this year, and I'm only looking outside the county, but trying to diversify a little bit. But yeah, so that so was
you were di- you were diving into things when the world was crashing down on me.
So yeah. It's a weird time for a lot of people.
Yeah, no, it was a very challenging time. The most challenging time I've ever experienced in my life. But I'm a stronger investor because of it, so it's okay. So tell me about. Basically, you're buying, like you bought that first flip, you made money, and then you had mentioned that you started flipping more, but then came the time of 2008 to where obviously the market crashed and flipping really wasn't a viable strategy at that point in time anymore, and you converted to rentals. Based on the amount of debt and how much you paid for properties, were you still able to cash flow? I mean, right out of the gate with those properties, turning them into rentals?
You know, on paper, yes. In reality, what I know now, not really. I say that because, I mean, let me give you a perfect example. The very first flip I ever did that was not the house I lived in, I bought that property for $52,000, and then I put probably close to $45,000, $50,000 into it. So I had about $100,000 total into it, and it rented for about $1,000 a month. So we call it the 1% rule, or, you know, the purchase price was, or the rent, the monthly rent was 1% of the purchase price. And, you know, the tenants pay their own water, sewer, garbage. So on paper, if most, especially newbies, would look at that and say, well, yeah, that should cash flow. My mortgage was $600-something a month, or I think it was $650 with tax and insurance. And the tenants paid almost $1,000, so clearly I should be cash flowing. The truth, though, is, like, you know, every year there's a couple, you know, maintenance repairs, things go wrong. I didn't have any vacancies for 8 years on that property.
Wow.
However, yeah, it was great. Like, the person lived there, but 8 years later, the tenant decides to get into drugs. He ends up, him and his significant other separate. He ends up not paying rent for a while. We tried to work with him because that was, you know, we knew him. I mean, we've known him for 8 years. We tried to work with him a little bit. That never really works out. Ended up having to start the eviction process. And then he burned the house down, or at least like partially down.
Oh, my gosh.
He went and lit a fire in the kitchen during the eviction process, and supposedly accidental. You know, he happened to leave a box on the counter after all his stuff was out, and just the garbage, I mean, thousands of pounds of garbage were left. Anyway, so of course, insurance takes care of it. We get a new kitchen, new upstairs. They repaint and sheetrock and all this stuff. But after everything's said and done, I still lost 15 grand on that thing, just of the stuff that insurance didn't cover because it wasn't part of the fire. Just his crap that was left in the backyard and all this stuff. All I have to say is I added up the numbers. How much did I actually make in cash flow over those 8 years? And it was about $15,000, almost exactly. And so like all the money I made, I then lost in one foul swoop. And so that's why I say on paper, yes, I cash flowed on a lot of those properties. But in reality, there's just things that happen. Even if I wouldn't have burned, I would have still had to pay probably 15 grand to just clean up his mess. And, you know, I've learned a little bit about managing tenants since then, and I would never have rented him in the first place today.
Yeah. Tenants can be brutal. It's funny. We have a mobile home park we're buying right now, and we just realized there's an environmental issue about a month ago. The owner that currently has this park, he had a disgruntled tenant, and he had one of the, there was like, I don't know, 10 or 15 rental units of this larger park. And one of those rental units, he was in eviction. And so in this part of the country, it was in Pennsylvania, they have, they use heating oil for fuel, you know, to fuel their furnace.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a 150-gallon tank in the back of this property that the landlord provided, basically the tank was provided by the landlord, but the heating oil is paid for by the tenant. Well, this disgruntled tenant decided that since he's getting kicked out, I'm basically going to make the landlord's life a living hell. And he basically poked a hole or punctured a hole into the bottom of this steel tank and let 150 gallons of fuel oil spill out into the soil. And then if that wasn't bad enough, he called DEP a day later. Yeah, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've never heard that one before. Oh, so
that's rough. That's
rough. It's actually not as bad as what it sounds. I mean, it's going to cost him about 30 grand to get it cleaned up before we buy it, to, you know, remediate it, to dig the soil out, this, that, and the other. But you talk about it, about disgruntled tenants, man. They can definitely add some gray hairs to your head for sure.
That is so true. It's so important to screen for good tenants because, yeah, like you get the wrong one in there and you can't always guard against it, but you can hedge your bets, I guess, against those bad ones.
I will promise you that he did not screen that tenant. Yep. I know his business model now, and I know he's been running that property, and I can promise you that he did not screen that tenant before he moved in there. So,
yep. But thank goodness for landlords like that, because then we can buy properties from them when they, you know, when they run into problems. Like almost every property I've ever bought has been from a landlord who somehow failed, whether it was a foreclosure or a, you know, just needed to get, they couldn't handle the property. I mean,
that's where the opportunities are. It
really is.
This one, the father built this property 45 years ago, and he passed away about 10 years ago, and the mom took it over. She got put in a nursing home 4 years ago. So these three siblings, which are all like in their 50s and 60s, basically kind of took it over, but one of them, really the oldest one, was kind of in charge. Like it got really laid on his lap, and he cannot wait to the day comes to where he gets out from underneath this thing. And it's a multi-million dollar property, but he is just like, I can't handle it anymore. This, that, and this environmental issue, like literally just put him through the roof. So,
oh, I bet.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you a little bit about your involvement in Bigger Pockets. You've been co-hosting that podcast now. You said back in, was it January 2013 that you guys launched that show? So
yep, exactly.
Yeah, so I think you're probably near 200 episodes or so, right?
Something. Yeah, we actually just crossed 200. I think we're at like 220 right now, maybe, something
fantastic.
Like that. Let's track.
Talk to me. Talk to me about how you even got hooked up with Bigger Pockets. How'd that work?
Sure. So I found actually Bigger Pockets during that very first that deal. The one that I lived in the house, and then the backstory to that is I lived in this house and I realized I was going to make a big chunk, and by big chunk, I was going to make about 20 grand on this flip that I was living in. You know, I fixed it up and I was going to sell it, and I realized, like, you know, I want to do real estate for the rest of my life. I was actually studying for law school. I had taken the LSAT and I was applying to schools, and I had a history degree, and you can't really do anything with history, but be a teacher or a lawyer. So I was going to go to law school anyway. So I decided instead to get into real estate, and I thought this is way better. You know, I was reading a lot of John Grisham books at the time, you know, The Firm and all that. And I realized that being a lawyer, I didn't want to get murdered. So I told my parents, I'm like, I'm not going to law school. I'm going to become a real estate investor. My dad said I was crazy. He said I was going to lose everything. My tenants wouldn't pay rent, and then I couldn't make the payments, and I would lose my properties. I'd be bankrupt, and I'd end up living under a bridge, is essentially what he said to me. And I was like,
oh my gosh,
dang. And I thought, you're right. I can't make a payment. I don't even make any money. What am I going to do if tenants don't pay rent? And so I remember I went to Google or Dogpile or whatever the search engine was then. I think it was probably Google. And I typed in what to do when tenants don't pay rent. And I found this article, and it wasn't so much that, I mean, yeah, it was a decent article, just about like how to, you know, what to do, how to evict, all that kind of stuff. But what really changed with me was I realized at that time that there were answers to all these things that people say, like you shouldn't do the real estate because X, Y, Z. I realized that there was like a community of people out there, like thousands, if not millions of real estate investors in America who knew the answer to these questions, even if I didn't. So anyway, that article came from this little tiny site at the time called Bigger Pockets. And I remember printing that article out, sticking it in like on my wall or something. And I kept it there for years, you know, from house to house as I moved, because it just meant a lot to me anyway. So in that process, I got connected with Bigger Pockets. I was one of the very first members to ever sign up for an account there. And over the years, eventually started just helping to write. After I bought a bunch of properties, which fast forwarding, you know, 7 years, I bought an apartment complex, which got me out of my job and, you know, quote unquote retired when I was 27. And so I started writing, ended up writing blog posts for Bigger Pockets. And that turned into Josh Dorkin, CEO, looking for someone to help him actually run the blog. And I had a lot of free time on my hands, so I said I'd help. And that turned into the podcast. So
okay, fantastic, good deal. Talk to us about what you're doing today, as far as like your investment activity. Again, sure. I know that you've been involved in single family flips. You've got rentals, apartment buildings. What's happening today?
Sure. So today I'm at, my portfolio is at 52 units right now, or 53, 52, somewhere in there. It started out with single family, then I, you know, bought a duplex, and I really liked multi. Multi works really well in my area, so I started buying a lot of small multifamilies, you know, with triplex here, a fourplex, a fiveplex, another fourplex, some duplexes, things like that. I'll do the occasional flip. I'll do a few flips every year. I don't like flipping very much, only in that I'm really bad at confrontation. And to be good at being a you know, a flipper, you got to yell at contractors. And I hate that. I really hate it. So what I discovered, though, is I started working with some partners. I've done it a couple times now, who are really good at confrontation, but maybe they don't have the financial resources or the knowledge to go out and do flips themselves. So that's been really successful for me, just working with partners on flipping, because then I don't have to be the bad guy. They can be the bad guy, and we still get, you know, everything done. Yeah. So that's been good. Yeah. And then right now, so I made a goal, like I said earlier, I made a goal not to buy anything in my area. And my goal for the year is to buy at least one mobile home park, largely based off listening to your mobile home park podcast. I want to buy one of those here in the next, sometime this year, at least 50 units. And I don't really care where it's at. I'd like the West Coast somewhere, but I'm pretty open. It's kind of fun because I feel like a newbie all over again. Because it's something I've never done before. So it's like I'm seeing this with fresh eyes. Like, how does a newbie approach real estate investing? Like, I got to learn about it. I got to figure this all out. I got to figure out how to get leads. And it's all starting brand new. And it's really, really a lot of fun.
You're going to be hooked. Let me know when you're ready to buy it, man. I'll help you buy it. But you're going to be hooked once you sink your teeth into the mobile home park game. You're going to realize.
I hope
like,
so.
The golden land.
what I feel like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like why I'm so attracted to mobile home parks so far is that, one, because I said I hate dealing with contractors, and I feel like there's less of that involved with the mobile home park. It's more of a business, just like large multifamily is.
Yes.
So it fits my personality better. And then also, I like the fact that, at least I feel like mobile home parks are a little more geared towards people who are good at managing tenants. And like, that's what we do. I mean, we manage all our own properties except for two. We manage all of our own properties, and my wife is the best landlord property manager I've ever known. I mean, she's a genius when it comes to managing tenants. So I thought, you know, if we can find a property that needs some work, my wife can and I can turn that thing around just by managing better. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why I'm excited about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty much 80% of the deals that we look at, I mean, are being mismanaged in one way or another. Whereas, so the good thing about the mobile home park space is that it's a much less sophisticated space than the apartment space. Not that you don't get unsophisticated apartment owners, but it's just, it's more fragmented. It's, you know, there's lots of mom and pops out there. They just, you know, I mean, it's very common that we run across parks that haven't raised rents in 7-8 years. I mean, my record to date is one that we actually own. They hadn't raised rents in 16 years.
Wow.
They were 45% below market on their rents, and it was the nicest mobile home park in the area. They just, I mean, very easy upside, as you know.
Yep. That's what I love that idea. I love that I love the idea that I can manage these properties into greater profitability.
So talk to me about, so you own 15 units today and you're basically retired. I mean, you know, managing units is it's not fully passive.
That's why I say quote unquote.
Yes. Yeah, so like, yeah, like the dream of like having a bunch of units and sitting on a beach and not even answering your phone and drinking Coronas all day long. It doesn't. Although you did just get back from Hawaii surfing for an entire month, so maybe it does exist. Maybe I'm just doing it the wrong way. But so 52 units, you're retired. Would you say that it's in today's world, like, and you have a bunch of smaller multifamily, would you say that that's a very viable option for those that are looking to invest? I don't care what you're investing, whether it's mobile home parks or single family homes or apartment buildings, that and once you get to that scale where you're at today, that, you know, you really should, if you buy them right, you should have enough cash flow that you probably can replace the normal 9-to-5 type income. Would you say that that's a very viable option to do?
I do. I mean, obviously today it's a little bit harder to find good deals. The way I look at it though is kind of the same way I did when I started. Now this, I've shifted a little bit, so I'll explain both the way that I used to think and the way that I do now. When I first started though, I thought if every unit I bought gave me $100 per month in cash flow, then I can just work backwards and figure out how many I need to be able to quit. So at the time it was, I needed $3,000 to pay all my bills. Like, I live in a fairly cheap area and I thought, $3,000 a month, I would call that good, and I would have enough to pay all my bills and have that, you know, financial freedom. And so I thought, well, $100 per month per unit. And I, when I say that, I also mean that's after everything. I mean, that's after, utilities and vacancies, setting aside money for repairs, mm-hmm. capital expenditures, all that stuff that adds up. If I can get $100 per month, so it means a fourplex gives me 400 and eightplex gives me 800. Then if I needed $3,000 a month, I just need 30 units. If I needed, and it doesn't matter what those units are. They could be single family houses. They could be a 30 unit apartment building would get me there, whatever. So at the time, that's what I wanted. So when I got to 30, it was like 34 units, I quit my job. And that's when I quote unquote retired. Now I've thought a little different about that today. And that I still think that works. I think it works perfect. You just set that goal. How many units do you want? And you go out and buy them any way you can, as long as they meet your metrics and your numbers, and they're not going to, you know, get you off track. Like, I collect units all day long. What's changed for me though is I realized that there's two levels of financial freedom. Level one financial freedom is it pays all your bills. And for me, that was originally at like $3,000 a month. Now that's a little bit higher because I have a little bit nicer stuff and a little bit nicer house. But still, I still have that level one financial freedom. Mm-hmm. What I'm shooting for now is level two financial freedom, which is I can do whatever I want whenever I want financial freedom. You know, that's the, you know, I make millions of dollars a year in income and I've got people to run everything. You know, I'm definitely not there. But the level one financial freedom, sure. Like right now, my properties could pay all my bills if I had to. And I could even go back to doing my own maintenance if I really had to, if things got bad. And so what I'm looking at today, that's why I'm still expanding. I mean, I think you get to level one and then you can, if you want to quit, great. Then you could jump in full time into getting to level two. And that's kind of what I'm doing right now.
Okay. That's a great plan. It's a great way to look at it as well. So where does level two, where do you need to be with level two? I mean, like, and then you mentioned like millions of dollars a year of income. Is that like level 10 or is that level three?
I don't know. I feel, I mean, obviously, yeah, you can go as much as you want. In my opinion, I mean, if I had $500,000 a year coming in passive cash flow with management in place, like where I'm not managing it and I had $500,000 a year, I'd call that like level two for me. I'd say that's like, you know, that's money that would be very, very hard to ever spend that much money. You know what I mean? Unless I'm really crazy and buying jets and all that. But, it's kind of I don't know what to say, goal for me to get that to level, but I guess that's where I'm headed. I feel like that amount would just be stupid rich passive income.
Yeah.
And go from there.
So there's a certain point in time where scalability becomes an issue from like a management perspective, and you guys are basically self-managing, and you said your wife basically oversees everything on a daily basis, and you're going to keep adding units to your rental portfolio. Do you see that there's a time in your business to where you guys might consider kind of consolidating and selling off some of the smaller stuff and kind of, you know, buying up into something bigger that's, you know, just easier to manage, something that's all in one location?
Yep. Yeah, very, very much so. Actually, we're hoping this year, I'm actually going to list that property, that very first one I bought that I just put $15,000 into after the fire. We're going to be selling that one this year. I'm selling a couple other ones, the ones that don't do real great. I mean, they give a little bit, but I know, like, again, over a 10-year period, I'm probably going to break even. All of those I'm going to get rid of this year. I'm probably going to sell my 24-unit apartment complex this year for that reason. I bought a lot of stuff when I was younger that today I wouldn't buy anymore. So it's kind of like with an employee, they say, if you have an employee that you wouldn't hire them again, you should probably fire them. It's kind of like if I have properties that I wouldn't buy again, I should probably get rid of them. And I don't regret buying them. I don't want people to get like, you know, think that, I don't know. People often use an excuse. I don't want to make a bad purchase. Oh, it's not, you know, as good as that deal that, you know, Kevin or Brandon talked about on the podcast. I shouldn't buy it. You know, you have to buy those deals, I feel like, to get to the understanding to be able to buy the better ones. Now, I'm not saying buy a bad deal, but, you know, I don't regret buying those ones. Yeah, if I break even after 10 years on them, like, they were just a stepping stone. None of those properties are making me rich.
It's a lesson. It's a lesson learned.
Yep. And I learned a ton in that. And because of those properties, I bought my apartment complex. Now, because of my apartment complex, I'll be able to buy a, you know, I could go take down a 100-unit mobile home park, and it shouldn't be that big of a deal because of the lessons I've learned in the last 10 years. So it's all just stepping stones.
As you get into like towards this phase number two of your business, to where you guys buy that 100-unit mobile home park, do you think there'll be a point in time to where, are you going to plan on buying something of that size to where you're essentially going to hire management in place, or will you guys still plan on managing it yourself?
I mean, my guess is at this point, and I should ask you, but my plan would be to find a place in which I could plug the existing tenants into my own system, but have an on-site manager to take care of the property. And so, I have an assistant right now who it's probably bad to use the word assistant because she doesn't actually do. It's more of like she's like my manager of my company, essentially. She runs a lot of my stuff, and so I assume I just probably have her kind of take over that management of that resident manager who lives on the park. But I'll still have them in my own system. We're using Buildium right now for bookkeeping and for management software. And I'll just basically take what I've already got going and just plug all the new tenants into that. That's kind of my plan.
Yep. I asked you that question because I wanted to make sure that you weren't going to tell me that you're going to go live in the mobile home park.
No.
Your wife wouldn't be too happy with you, I don't think.
No, she would not be real thrilled. We finally bought like kind of, I don't want to say our dream house, but like a really cool house a couple of years ago. And we like it here. It's a little bigger than a mobile home park or mobile home.
Although there are some waterfront mobile home parks, so you might be able to get something waterfront. You could sell her on that idea, right?
that is probably true, as long as I can avoid the flood insurance and all that.
So you guys get to speak to like just a wide variety of real estate investors on your show, and just being involved in the Bigger Pockets community, you see everything from the beginner that's literally just stepping his toe in the water to see, you know, is this real estate investing thing even for me? And then you've got guys on the other end of the spectrum that are just big ballers, man. They've got, you know, tens of millions of dollars worth of property under their belt, and they've been doing it for 30 plus years. I want to speak more to those that are just kind of getting started. You're dipping your toe in the water, or maybe they're already out there looking and they're trying to determine, you know, what the right steps are. I mean, what are some of the big challenges that you see new investors go through? And I'm sure there's like a top like five list, right? Or top 10 list even, like the biggest, you know, challenges. And then more so, I want to hear like how you see investors overcome them. Because you see a lot more firsthand than I even do of like people making like the leap of faith, but then really pushing through and finding success. So tell me about some of those big challenges and how they're overcome.
Sure. So, I mean, the two big ones that people always say, of course, is I can't find any deals and I can't find any money, right? People don't have, especially the market's so competitive, I can't find any deals and I don't have any money to fund the deal. I mean, there's also problems with people. I don't have the experience or the knowledge or whatever, but the big ones are, I don't have the money. I don't have the deals. So the way I look at that, I'll address the money part first. If I were to, I always ask newbies this when they say they don't have money. I like to kind of walk them through this exercise where I say, imagine that I was going to sell you my house, and my house is worth $350,000. And let's say I'm going to sell it to you for 10 grand. I mean, you could turn around tomorrow and sell that property for 350 grand and make yourself 340 in profit or whatever, right? But you got to come up with a 10 grand, you know, in the next couple of weeks to buy this property. What do you do? I mean, you have to come up with just 10 grand and you could immediately make a ton of money. And everybody I ask that question to has a really easy time answering it. They say things like, oh, I just sell off my car, or, oh, I'd talk to my, you know, my buddy who's got 10 grand, or, you know, I'd go out and find a partner who would give me the 10 grand and I'd split the profit on the deal with them. Or, you know, I would, you know, borrow it from a credit card, or, you know, there's 100 answers to that question. And I say, great, that's how you invest in real estate without, you know, using your own money. Those exact same situations apply no matter what size deal you're looking at. If you have a good deal, the financing's easy. People just, I think, need to focus on finding good deals, and then you'll figure out the financing. I mean, there's a lot of ways to buy deals, like, yeah, partnerships, lines of credit, all that stuff, seller financing. I mean, it all works. It's all out there. It's not really hard to learn. So I think focus on the deal, focus on finding really, really good deals. And so anyway, so that's the money side of things. And then the finding deals part of things, I think, comes down to something I call the deal funnel. And it's not like I invented this, but like the deal funnel, which is the one thing I wish somebody would have explained to me when I first got started with real estate. And it's that finding deals is actually very, very simple. There's only like four or five stages to it. You need to get leads coming in. You need to analyze those leads. You need to make offers on the properties, and then you get some of those offers accepted. For example, I might send out 1,000 direct mail letters, and out of those, you know, for leads, and out of those letters, I might get back, I don't know, let's say 100 people give me a call. And out of those 100 people who call me, I'm going to analyze, let's say 50 of those deals, because half of them are just garbage I don't even have to worry about. And out of the 50 I analyze, let's say I'm going to make 10 offers on them. And out of those 10 offers, one's going to get accepted. Now, this is the way that pretty much every single real estate investor in the world that's successful operates their business. I never heard it explained quite that way. But in reality, that's how every single deal works. You get leads, you make you analyze them, you make offers, and you get some accepted. Mm-hmm. And every investor's got a different kind of formula and different way of doing it. But at its simplest core, that's all real estate investing deal acquisition is those four things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I ask people if they're struggling to find a deal. Well, where's that breaking down for you? Are you struggling with the leads? You know, or I'll say, well, if you didn't buy any deals in the past month, which of course most newbies haven't, how many offers did you make? Oh, well, you know, I didn't make any offers. Oh, okay. Well, how many deals did you analyze to determine exactly how much to offer? Oh, well, you know, I actually didn't analyze any either. Okay. Well, you know, how many, you know, deals did you, you know, how many leads came in? Or, you know, you walk people through that entire process, and they're all fairly simple, easy to learn. So, I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm sure that's pretty much what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's what everyone does, is those four things. So work the funnel, make some offers, figure out where you can get it, and then when you get one, figure out the financing.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I was going to ask you the question, what comes first, the money or the deal? And I mean, my answer typically to that question is like, it's simultaneous to a certain extent.
Yep.
And it depends on what your network is, and it depends on how they answered the one question you gave them about, you're willing to sell your $350,000 house then for $10,000. What are you going to do to come up with that $10,000? Because there are some people that would struggle to come up with that $10,000. And so for those, I tell them that you need to be building your money network simultaneously while you're building your deal flow and working it together.
You know, there's a thing I put it on Instagram the other day. I'm a big Instagram fan, and so I made this little fancy little picture, and it said, "There's four things that are required, or I shouldn't say required. There's four things in real estate to be successful. There's you have to have money, or experience, or knowledge, or hustle. Those four things. So again, that's money, experience, knowledge, and hustle. You only need two." And you only need two of those. So you can have money and experience. You could be successful. You could have money and hustle. Or if you don't have money, you could have experience and knowledge, and you could do it as well. Or you could have just hustle and knowledge, or just hustle and experience, right? So any of those four things, you can combine two of those. So if you don't have any money, well, compensate by building up your knowledge base and become the smartest person in your area at a certain niche, and you're not going to have a problem. And then go hustle, and you're not going to have a problem. You can get a deal, you can get financing, you get all that because you've got those two things. But people come too often, they don't have any of them. They don't have any hustle or motivation or drive. They don't have any knowledge. They got no experience. They got no money. And then they're asking how to get started. Like, well, you know, forget the money side of things for now and just go build the other ones, and then you'll figure the money out.
Yeah, and if you're actually lacking all of them but the hustle, hustle goes a long way.
It does, yep. Man. Hustle goes a long way because hustle will give you eventually the knowledge or the experience. Like, you know, you go and make – like if you'll say you have no experience at all and you have no knowledge at all, you have no idea what you're doing, but you've got this massive hustle and you get out there and you just start throwing out stupid offers, and you know, some guy's going to tell you, you know, this is not how real estate's done. You're being stupid. Try this. And then you do it again and you learn a little bit, you learn a little more. And just by pure hustle, you'll gain knowledge and experience.
Yep. No, absolutely. And, I want to bring up something real quick. You mentioned direct mail during our conversation there in the last 5 minutes. And I wanted to ask you, you know, based on like your current portfolio, give me an idea of like where a lot of those leads came from. Cause I know times have kind of changed a little bit, but I mean, are you a big proponent of direct mail? Is that where a lot of your leads originally came from, or, you know, were they brought from other investors or brokers, bought off the MLS? Give me an idea of where, you know, how you've built your portfolio.
All of the above. But yeah, I'm not a huge direct mail marketing guy. As much as I believe strongly in it and I know that it works, I haven't needed it. You know, I consider direct mail like this machine that when you turn it on, it spits out leads. I see it working all the time. All of the top investors that I know use direct mail marketing. Last year, I used direct mail marketing and I got some deals from it. Like, it just works when you work the system, when you work it right. I mean, it's not guaranteed, but it works when you work it. Last year I got one deal off my website. I got another one off direct mail marketing. I got one off the MLS. I got one from just a word of mouth referral to my assistant. Just somebody her mom knew somebody who wanted to sell. I got another one off, Craigslist or Zillow? I got one off of Zillow. So really it's kind of a variety of ways. I would say my portfolio primarily has been built using the MLS. But even that, I mean, my 24 unit apartment complex came from an old couple at church. Like, I was at church one Sunday and I just read the book, The ABCs of Real Estate Investing by Ken McElroy. Mm-hmm. And, I love that book and I thought it was fantastic. And I was really pumped up and excited. And I was talking to this older couple that I had known for years, and I had no idea they did anything with real estate. And I just mentioned to them that, you know, man, I just read this book and it was on real estate investing with apartment complexes and fixing them up. And I love that idea and I can't wait to do that. I'm going to do that someday. And that's a 24-year-old kid, you know, just being excited. And they looked at me kind of funny and said, well, you know, we actually have an apartment complex that needs to be fixed up that we're looking to sell. And it was like, it was perfect, right? Like, you know, like, yeah, I got lucky, extremely lucky. But what's that phrase? Like, luck is where preparation meets opportunity.
Opportunity, yep, right? Yep.
Yeah, so like, I mean, I read the books. I had already been investing for a number of years, you know, 3-4 years, buying single families and some small multis. I was telling everybody I knew that I wanted a apartment complex. And this couple happened to have one. So, I mean, yes, it was luck, but it was also like I was pushing that. Like, I mean, I was ready. And so that came from just word of mouth. And it pretty much all works. I'm going to be using direct mail marketing with the mobile home park search. Mm-hmm. I've built my data. I have a pretty good sized database right now. I've been working on that for the past month or two. Again, leads. And now I'm going to start sending the direct mail out and phone calls and all that good stuff. And I'll start getting I'll start having conversations, and then I'll start analyzing deals. I'll start making offers and I'll get some accepted, and I'll just start working the same funnel that I tell people. If you're looking for your first deal, your thousandth deal, same thing applies.
Yeah, and the biggest secret with direct mail, assuming that you have a quality list, like this is just one point I want to make here. Assuming you have a quality list, though, forget about that side of it, but you got a good quality list you're mailing to, is to be consistent with it. And that doesn't matter whether you're sending out 10 mailers or 10,000 mailers. You can't do it just one time. You might get one deal out of it. Like, you might get the timing right and have your letter land in someone's lap at the right time where they're motivated, where they're going to call you, and it's going to be a good opportunity. But you're going to find that if you just keep mailing to that list of 10,000 or whatever the number is, you know, 10 or 10,000 over and over and over again, the more times you do it, the better. I mean, you know, we typically mail 4 or 5 times a year to our same list, and it's a pretty big database. But every single time, I mean, some of these people have received like 20 mailers from us over the past couple of years, and they don't call on the 19th, they call on the 20th one, you know?
Yep. And, it's crazy. And I heard some stats once about that, like about where like the average, you know, some direct mail big company did this and figured out like it takes an average of like 7 or 8 mailers to get for somebody to call you on a piece of direct mail. And so like, yeah, people are just not consistent. I mean, if there's one thing I think that people just need to do to be successful in anything on earth, it's just consistency, or at least like right consistency, right? I mean, you can be consistent about the wrong thing and not get anywhere. But how many times have you heard people, or I've heard people say, you know, yeah, I tried direct mail, it didn't work. Or right. I tried driving for dollars. I tried posting on Craigslist. And I'm like, none of that matters. Like, yeah, I tried going to the gym. Yeah, last week I went to the gym. I worked out for an hour and a half. Nothing happened. So I went home and I'm not going to go back because that place is a scam. That's a scam. That gym, you know, like it's ridiculous. Like, if you want success, you go to the gym every day for a solid year. Are you going to find success? Most likely.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be hard not to.
There's an example someone gave me a couple months ago, and I would give them credit for it, but I can't recall who I learned it from. But we were talking about direct mail, and they said, you know, you go out to your mailbox every day, and at least twice a week, you get a batch of flyers, like, you know, the junk mail that's either from mattress companies or tire companies. Yep. And those same companies send you that stuff. If you actually counted it, they probably send it to you multiple times a month. And they're going to do it for many years. I mean, we only, you know, the average person probably buys new tires in their car every 3 or 4 years. And, you know, now with this new marketing campaign out there, we know that we need a new mattress every 8 to 10 years. So, I mean, they literally can mail you hundreds or thousands of times because it doesn't matter, because they know they want to get their message in front of you when the timing is right, when you're motivated and you either need or want to buy their product. And that's when they make their money, right? And so, but if they just did it one time, the chances of them getting that in front of you when you actually needed new tires or when you need a new mattress, I mean, it's so slim. Yep. It's like a micro of a percentage, you know, like the chance of that actually converting to a sale. So yep.
The same is true for like buying a car or credit card offers, right? I get credit card offers in the mail like every day. I get a new credit card offer in the mail and I just throw them away every time. Now, I could go and sign up for that one service that you can like opt out of that. But do I? No, because I know that eventually I'm going to be looking for a new credit card and I'm going to want the best one. So like, and I mean, I have responded to, probably in the last 10 years, done it once. I've responded to a credit card offer and got it because they offered some crazy amount of miles and I wanted to do some travel hacking or whatever they call it. But I mean, it's the same thing. You know, eventually, if I and actually, let me on that note, when I was buying that 24-unit apartment complex from that couple, they told me, they came to me one time, and I thought they were just negotiating, but they weren't, because, you know, later we became really good friends. And anyway, like they got a piece of direct mail, and they told me at the time, they just said, you know, we got somebody who's interested in buying our property, and so we called, you know, we're in discussions with him as well. And so if you want to move on this, you need to, you know, move on it. That was kind of them hurrying me up to get more official with the purchase and sale. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point was, but this guy who probably was just a random direct mail campaign, this couple would have sold it to him for the same price they sold it to me. But you know what? He never called them back.
Oh my gosh.
He never called them back. And like, man, I'm glad he didn't. I'm glad there's crappy investors out there doing, you know, he probably sent out, came out of some guru, you know, workshop, all fired up about direct mail, sent out one thing, and then just got lost interest and moved on.
Mm-hmm. Yep, but, that's sad. But hey, you got the good opportunity out of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I got the opportunity out of it. I jumped at it. And, you know, so yeah, direct mail, I mean, it's going to be a schedule when I do it here. It'll be every, either quarter or whatever. We'll have a system set up so that it happens over and over and over and over. And I'll commit to it for years because I know that it always pays off in the end.
And you know what happened? That guy that sent that mailer and didn't call them back is telling everyone else, I did direct mail, but it didn't work for me.
Yep, I know, right? That is so true.
The sucker.
Yep, it's so true. So I'm a big believer in, like, yes, doing things like action is important, but I'm a bigger believer in creating a process that makes sure that action gets done. Example of that would be, you know, let's say when somebody doesn't have any money and they want to find deals, I tell them a really easy solution is go to Craigslist and post an ad that says you're looking for deals, or go to Craigslist and go look for mom and pop landlords that are listing their properties for rent. I mean, how much easier can it get to get a lead? Because they give you their phone number directly right there online. Like their personal cell phone number is right there in Craigslist. So yes, so I tell people go to Craigslist, but the key is not going to Craigslist and calling mom and pop landlords. The key is taking out your phone right now and saying, you know, talking to Siri or whatever, saying, Siri, remind me every Monday at 5 p.m. pull the list of landlords and call everyone. And that's what's going to get you the deal. If you do that every single solitary Monday, that's what's going to get you the deal. So rather than focusing on just like, I'm going to go call Craigslist today, you know, set that system up that makes sure it gets done. And if you're not the kind of guy that's going to get it done, hire someone to get that system done for you then.
Yep. I love it. I love it. Absolutely. So I want to change gears a little bit now, Brandon. I'm going to ask you, you've been at this 10 years now, right? Is that right?
2007? Yep, 10 years.
Okay, 10 years. If you can go back in year one, because you've learned a lot over the last 10 years, but if you go back in year one, knowing what you know today, and give yourself some advice when you were first getting started, what would that advice be?
Yeah, I would reiterate a couple of things I said earlier. The first one is like how that deal funnel works. I wish I would have understood that, because like I just kind of like did stuff, you know, like, oh, today I'm going to go and make an offer and combine that. Or I'll back up. Basically, yeah, I'm going to make an offer one day. Tomorrow I'm going to maybe go look at a property, and then next month I'm going to go and do this other thing. So it was very, very random. I just kind of did things as I felt like doing them. I wish I would have understood that deal funnel, and I wish I would have created a process daily to work that funnel. Mm-hmm. So even if it's 5 minutes a day or 10 minutes a day, that's better than 5 minutes on a Monday, and then 3 weeks later, an hour, and then a month later, another hour. So I would have told myself, stick with that process, just get leads, analyze them, make offers, get some accepted, and do a little bit every single solitary day, or at least, you know, on a schedule that I can stick to.
Do you think you'd be a lot farther along with reaching your goal of number of units if you would have had that system in place many years ago?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm sure I would. The only thing that like stops me is like, you know, at some point I go back and forth on how many units I want, right? Because I read a book like The ABCs of Real Estate, and I'm like, I want 1,000 units, right? And then like I read this book called Life and Air. Have you heard of that book?
No, I haven't.
Really, really good. It's like Millionaire, but with the word life instead of million. So Life and Air. And I read that, and it's all about like more like enjoying your life. It's more like 4-hour work week style, yes, combined with real estate. And I'm like, I don't need 1,000 units. I only need like 7 that cash flow really well and paid off, right? So then I go back to that, and then I'm like, I read another book or listen to a podcast or talk to a guy like you, and I'm like, I need 1,000 units. And like, I just go back and forth all the time. So yes, I think I'd be a lot farther on along as long as that's the current mode I'm in.
Yeah, you know, I feel the same way. I'm a big fan of like life work balance. I mean, I've got 2 young children. I've got a wife that I love dearly. I don't look for, you know, a purpose to like find times away from my family. You know, like I want to be here. Yep. In fact, I've got 2 partners that aren't married, don't have kids, and it works out really well for us because they're very open. Well, I'm open to traveling, but they're a lot more open to traveling than, yep, myself. And I like it that way because I don't want to miss these like very, very important years. Every year is important in your kid or your wife's life. But I like, there's some years right now that I think are very, very important for me to make sure that I'm here, that I'm you know, involved in my children's lives as they grow up and as they learn to become adults and that. And I never want to look back. I've got a lot of friends, and I've got many acquaintances I've met over the years that are, you know, 15, 20, 30 years my senior, that, you know, all very successful. But it seems like the common pattern that I see as a form of regret is that they work too hard, you know, when they had a, yep, young family and didn't get a chance to spend enough time around their kids or their wife or the family in general. Or it's just, I don't want that. I do not want that regret. So, although I want to build a big business, but I think the important thing about building a big business is that with technology nowadays, it allows you to really, if you're really good about, you know, strategic systems and processes that help you scale without necessarily creating a lot more work for yourself, more workload. I think that's the way to go. And so like I don't know what my number is yet, Brandon, but ever gets a point in time where I see that there's a stretch happening where I'm not getting to spend that important, that valuable time with my family, I'll pull the plug. Like, it's just because I'm never, ever going to let that happen. So I think that everyone's got to just kind of look at their own life, like look internally and find out like what's their why? Why are they doing this? Like, I'm doing this business because I have a passion for the business. I like giving back to people. I like helping people. I like the product that we have, but I also, you know, want to provide for my family. But at a certain point, you've got more than what you need. You know, like, yep, there's a certain point you said if you had $500,000 a year, you wouldn't even know how to spend $500,000. So, yep, again, unless you're out doing weird things with your money, or I guess flying private jets around or doing things like that, then you could probably blow up pretty quickly. But either way, no, life work balance is very important. And I think it's something that everyone needs to think of. Even if you don't have a family today, you know, if your goal is to have a family, you really need to build your business around, you know, either your current family they have, or, you know, the family that you think you're going to have in the future, if that's part of your life plan. So,
yeah. Yeah, I agree 1,000%. Yeah, I got a little girl, you know, Rosie. She's a year old now. She turns a year this Friday.
Oh, that's awesome!
And
congratulations!
Yeah, it's so much fun. Thank you. It's the best thing ever. And so, like, I mean, even if I had, you know, that $500 or $600, $1 million a year in cash flow, I'm sure I would still do real estate in some way. I'd still hustle. It's our passion, right? It's hard. It's our,
exactly,
blood, I think, to do it. But
it's not work to, like, me. I mean, it's really not, yeah, work to me, but it does take time. Like, it's not all passive.
Yep, exactly. But at the same time, like, I want to make sure that I can be there for every single soccer game she'll ever be in. And I want to be there for every school field trip. And I want to be, you know, I want to take vacations with her all the time. And I want, you know, I want to be the world's best dad, but also be able to do fun stuff with real estate. And that's another reason I like the idea of mobile home parks, is I think that and multifamily, like, they're scalable,
yes,
to a degree where I don't have to be involved in much as I do on my own properties right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. So I'm going to ask you a tough question now, Brandon. Sure. I don't ask it that often on the show, but I'm going to throw this out there to you and try not to throw you off course too much. Sure. If you lost everything today and you had to rebuild your real estate business all over again in a brand new city, brand new state, with no contacts whatsoever from former partners or investors, and you only had a couple $1,000 to your name, what steps would you take to do this and why?
Sure. So, I mean, assuming I still know what I'm doing, at least knowledge-wise. If I didn't, I would learn it, you know. And either way, in a new city, I'd have to learn that. I think networking is super, super, super important because every area is different. I'm a big fan of partnerships when it comes to if I have no money. Like, if I had no money, I'd do a partnership. So here's what I'd actually do. Like, step by step, my actual plan would be this. I would start a local real estate group if there wasn't already a really good one in my area. I would start one. So, you know, BiggerPockets, I'll throw in a plug here. So we have a page, biggerpockets.com/events, E-V-E-N-T-S. It's where anybody can go. Well, I guess, yeah, I think you have to be a pro member to make an event. But anyway, I'd make an event and just say, hey, we're getting together at this local bar or club or, you know, whatever, some meeting place. The Ram restaurant works really well around here in the Pacific Northwest. We're going to get together, have drinks, talk about real estate. And I'd do that every single month. I'd have one meetup every month, and I would be the guy that organized it. The reason why is because when you're a guy who organizes or a girl who organizes an event, you're seen as like the leader of that event. Everyone wants to know you and talk to you. So I would become the leader of a small local networking group that would grow into, you know, I don't know, 50 people show up every month for this networking event. Out of them, I could guarantee you I would find hard money lenders, private money lenders. I'd find partners. I'd find wholesalers who've got deals. I'd find people who have got hundreds of units that can tell me exactly how they did it. I would take those guys out to coffee, out to lunch every week. And I would just, I would really focus on building that strong local network of people who are successful and putting together that puzzle. And from there, I think it would be probably pretty easy to rebuild what I've got.
I love that. No, that's a great way to do it. I mean, gosh, it doesn't cost any money, really.
Really nothing.
Oh, and then you got meetup.com. You might have to pay a little bit for that. But yeah, still, like, it's very inexpensive to get something like that going. That's a great idea. Awesome. I love it. So, Brandon, now we're going to enter what I like to call the golden nugget segment of the show. And this is really just where we round things out for the day. I'm going to ask you, if you wouldn't mind leaving our audience with one last final golden nugget of advice or wisdom that would inspire and motivate them as they progress in their real estate investing career, what would that one last final golden nugget be?
Sure. I'm gonna cheat and give you two things that mean a lot to me, and they're kind of a summary of what we talked about today. But the first one is a quote by Jim Rohn. He says, it's one of my favorite quotes. I said, life does not get better by chance. It gets better by change. In other words, like, if you're somebody who's trying to get started with real estate or trying to take your real estate to the next level, like, that does not happen automatically. It does not happen naturally. It doesn't happen without you making a massive change in your life to get there. And so if you want something different, you have to do something different. And so figure out what that is. And that kind of goes into the next thing, which is another quote. And I'll probably butcher this one because it's kind of long. Hal Elrod, the author of The Miracle Morning, which is a fantastic book, he said in his book, basically, if you define your process and commit to it for an extended period of time, the results take care of themselves. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. You know, if you're trying to, I mean, this works in any industry, whether it's sales and marketing, whether you're in real estate, whether you're talking about losing weight, whether you're talking about anything you want to do, don't focus so much on the goal. Focus on that process. You know, so if I want to lose 20 pounds, yeah, I could put up a picture on my wall of a guy who's got a six pack, but that doesn't do anything for me. I could put a vision board together. I could chant. I could hum. I could say affirmations. I could do all these things that, sure, they might be good for you, but at the end of the day, that they don't do it. What's going to help me lose 20 pounds? I'm going to diet and I'm going to exercise every single day. And so when you focus on the process and commit to it for an extended period of time, the results just take care of themselves. So I just love that quote from Hal Elrod.
I love that. No, that's fantastic. Well, Brandon, this has been a lot of fun, man. It's kind of long overdue. Yeah. We should have had you on like a million years ago. So
I know. I'm kind of offended. No, this was awesome.
Yeah. So for those that want to learn more about you, maybe want to make contact with you, reach out to you, what is the best website to find you on?
Sure. It's probably going to be biggerpockets.com. I got a profile there. You can find me. I'm sure it won't be too hard. Or hit me up on Instagram. My Instagram handle is Beardy, like beard with a Y, Beardy Brandon.
So, Beardy Brandon. That's creepy.
Beardy
too.
Brandon.
Yeah, we're talking mouth to mouth. I'm talking mouth to mouth with Beardy Brandon.
There you go.
Brandon, it's been a great time. Really appreciate you coming to the show, bud. You have a great week, okay?
Hey, thank you. You too.
Congratulations. Now you've got more of the best tricks of the trade in building massive amounts of passive income from real estate. For more amazing resources, visit realestateinvestingforcashflow.com. And we'll see you next Monday morning.